Today's WBFO brief was recorded at around 8:30 in the morning. This is WBFO News.
Another prominent local Democratic official is leaving his position prior to the end of his elected term. Town of Hamburg Supervisor Randy Hoke will resign in January, telling the Buffalo News he has been offered, quote-unquote, another opportunity, though he declined to provide specifics. Elected in 2021 in a bitterly fought race against former Erie County Comptroller Stefan Mihailu, Hoke has over a year remaining in his term. The town board is expected to appoint a new supervisor in January. The move follows other recent departures, notably Buffalo Mayor Byron Brown resigning to run Western Regional Off-Track Betting Corporation, and the chair of the Erie County Legislature, April Baskin, who will exit when she is sworn into the New York State Senate. An Allegheny County couple faces extensive federal charges for allegedly operating an illegal marijuana growing operation. According to the U.S. Attorney's Office, 58-year-old Daniel Ackerman and 31-year-old Anna Maldonado Delgado, both of Cuba, New York, were initially arrested following the execution of a search warrant at their Farnsworth Road property. The charges carry a potential maximum sentence of 40 years in prison and a $5 million fine. And two area projects are expected to boost the state's effort in expanding renewable energy. Governor Kathy Hochul says contracts have been executed for 23 large-scale land-based renewable energy projects that will produce enough energy to power 700,000 homes. Projects include Bear Ridge Solar in Niagara County and Allicat Wind out of Allegheny, Cattaraugus, and Wyoming counties. A Buffalo man will spend 25 years to life for beating and stabbing his girlfriend to death. According to the Erie County District Attorney's Office, a jury deliberated for 40 minutes before convicting 30-year-old Savon Stewart on a charge of murder in the second degree. In August of 2023, Stewart killed 37-year-old Jenna McDermott Beal in her Main Street apartment. In reporting the case, authorities also issued a statement. If you or someone you know is a victim of domestic violence, help is available through the Be Safe Domestic Violence Victim Advocacy Program. More information is available at 858-4630. The city of Niagara Falls is preparing to take over ownership of 39 buildings on Main Street in a move meant to kickstart a brand new development initiative for the Mid-City District. Mayor Robert Restaino said he hopes to formally acquire the swath of buildings by early January, with the anchor being student housing connected with Niagara University.
I realize that in order for developers to be interested in this location, this has to pencil out as a profit for them. So starting with acquisition of the buildings, we have to be reasonable in how we get these buildings into the hands of developers.
Work on some of the buildings could begin by this coming summer and be move-in ready for students by the start of the 2026 fall semester for Niagara University. A winter weather advisory will be in place starting at 7 o'clock tonight for Buffalo, Northern Erie, Niagara, Genesee, Allegheny, and Orleans counties. A lake effect snow warning for areas to the south. The 2025 Buffalo mayoral race is starting to heat up with a new candidate officially throwing his hat into the ring yesterday. WBFO's Michael Loss has that story.
Former Buffalo Fire Commissioner Garnell Whitfield has formally announced his intention to run for Buffalo mayor. Whitfield was an early name for the vacant position during former Mayor Byron Brown's departure to become the CEO of Western Regional Off-Track Betting. He recently sat down with WBFO to discuss his vision for the mayoral office, including his commitment to the city of Buffalo's workforce.
I believe we have committed and very talented workforce within the city of Buffalo. I've worked with many of these people. I know their dedication is, and I know what their frustration is. And I believe that we can galvanize them and we can provide the kind of leadership that would allow them to prosper and to grow.
Another key influence in Whitfield's campaign is the east side of Buffalo, highlighting the systemic obstacles that became prevalent after the Tops Markets massacre on May 14th, 2022, which tragically took the life of his mother, Ruth Whitfield.
The east side is in need, is in crisis, is in need. That has to be a focus of my administration. I make no apologies for that. But what's good for the east side is good for the north, south, and west sides, too. You see, we none of us can reach or attain, that place. That beautiful place that, you know, we should be in and we want to live in without all of us being better. And so by focusing on the east side, it's going to help the whole city grow.
For the full conversation with Garnell Whitfield about his campaign, tune in to WBFO's What's Next at 10 a.m. The episode will also be available as a podcast on all platforms shortly after airing. This is Michael Loss for WBFO News.
Providence Farm Collective in Orchard Park is calling on its supporters to attend tonight's town board meeting to show support for the group in its dispute with the town of Orchard Park. In 2023, the collective secured 37 acres of farmland on Burton Road in Orchard Park. It is in a dispute with the town over hooking up for out-of-district water agreements. The board meeting starts at 6 tonight at the Orchard Park Municipal Center.
Hi, I'm Mason Ault. And this is the WBFO Disabilities Beat. December 1st marks World AIDS Day, a time many honor those who fought for better treatment and against the disease's ongoing stigma. I speak with Matt Crean Higgins, Vice President of Specialty Care Services at Evergreen Health, about both progress and the barriers in HIV/AIDS treatment. This conversation has been edited for length and clarity. Could you briefly tell me about World AIDS Day and why it's important to the community?
So World AIDS Day is a longstanding day held on December 1st every year for a long time to acknowledge the impact of HIV and AIDS around the entire globe. And so it's a time to focus on the progress that we've made locally, to look at where we are locally, but also to remember that HIV and AIDS have impacted our entire world and continue to do so in different ways. And that depending on what the access to resources is in different places that people live, the outcomes can be different. So it is a good time both to recognize the incredible progress that we've made locally, but also to really realistically acknowledge that that same progress hasn't been attained in all parts of the world.
Where have you not seen that progress?
There are still people, we don't know how many, who are living with HIV who don't know their diagnosis. And so it's also a good thing to do at World AIDS Day to encourage everyone who doesn't know for certain that they've had an HIV test before to talk to their medical provider about it, to access testing services at a place like ours or a Department of Health, really anywhere you can get an HIV test. Well, because knowing a person's status is really power. And we all have an HIV status, and no matter what it is, there's something that we can do with that information. The World AIDS Day is a good time to remember that, too, for our own selves.
What type of services do people like yourself at Evergreen Health provide?
So for a person living with HIV, we provide ongoing medical care. Most persons who learn that they're HIV positive are able to start medication the same day or within a few days if they want to wait a little while, which is a big change from even 8 years ago when people used to wait a little bit longer to even start treatment. And it's a humongous change from times 10, 15, 20 years ago. So we are able to make sure that they have access to the medication that they need, that they have knowledge and resources to make sure that they know how to take it and to know why they're taking it, but also to have access to other services that help a person to get engaged in medical care and stay engaged in medical care.
How have you seen the perception and treatment change over the years, or maybe in the past 10 years that you've been working?
Something that we've known for, you know, quite a few years now is that a person living with HIV who's on effective treatment and not pass HIV on sexually to their partners. And that's a big deal. And a lot more people know that, but not everyone knows that yet. And we're saying it as often as we can, but unfortunately, you know, it's hard to replace old news with new news. I mean, it's sometimes hard to replace old standing ideas with new information. And so something that's really important to all of us that people know is that if a person tells you that they're living with HIV and they're on treatment, there's no risk whatsoever in terms of engaging with them sexually. And I think that's something that we want to see more and more, is more people understand that, because unfortunately, large amounts of stigma still exist in our community, in all communities, and we all have to take every opportunity that we can to reduce that.
What types of barriers specifically in accessing treatment for HIV or AIDS still exist?
The biggest reason a person doesn't know their HIV status is the fear of stigma. And I see that repeated in studies pretty often. There's also, I think not everyone knows, but it is true, in New York State, there's a lot of programs that can help a person if they're uninsured or underinsured to make sure that they are able to get their medication and make sure that they're able to get their treatment appropriately. And so in New York State, the HIV Uninsured Care Program makes sure that really just about everybody, you know, people who are working, people who have other insurance but may have costs associated with their insurance, are able to access the medications, the laboratory tests, the medical service that they need to treat their HIV diagnosis.
What other steps do you think could be taken to combat that stigma and those barriers?
I think the really the most important thing is to encourage everyone of any identity, of any real or perceived risk experience, to know their HIV status and to take action on it. I think something that's been kind of a big change in our movement over time is recognizing that you know, we have to change the narrative away from the notion that the diagnosis, we want to be respectful always that a diagnosis is a big deal to a person, but we also want to be clear that there are action steps that can be taken for that.
You can listen to the Disabilities Beat segment on demand, view a transcript and plain language description for every episode on our website at WBFO.org. I'm Mason Ault.
Don't forget to like or subscribe so you can help others find this podcast. And if you love it, leave a review too. The WBFO Brief Podcast and the award-winning journalism of WBFO's news team are made possible by our members. Thank you for listening.